the end of slide 16, I was talking about the boss coming in and telling me I looked real tired. I'll take some time off, and I told him as soon as I met that man that talked about a gas dehydrator, I would take off and for a few days. This was on the day before Washington's birthday. And now I will continue later on this. Shortly after the president left, the man about the dehydrators called, and I was there, and we discussed the conditions, and he recommended a certain dehydrator, and I signed up to buy it, gave him a check for a down payment. I then went home and laid down and was resting. My wife said I should go see a doctor, that there was something wrong with me, that I was cold all the time and short of breath. So the next morning, Washington's birthday, I slept late, got up, and the wife took me down to a medical professional building, and I called on the doctor that had examined all of us out at the plant for employment. And he talked to me a while, and he says, I'm going to have a nurse come in and get a sample of blood. She came in and tapped one of my earlobes and got some blood. A little bit she came back and tapped the other earlobe and got some more blood. A little while she came back in and said, I need some more out of the end of one of your fingers. And she got it and went off. And shortly after, the doctor came in and he says, how did you get into this office? I said, my wife drove me down in the car, and I walked in, got on the elevator, and came up here into your office. He says, you couldn't possibly do that. And I said, well, I did anyway. I said, what's the trouble? He says, you haven't got hardly any blood. He says, you're extremely anemic. He says, we say it this way, the normal hemoglobin blood is around 65 to 66, 67%. When it gets down to 60%, you're slightly anemic. When it gets down to 55%, you are anemic. When it gets down to 50%, you're quite anemic. And when it gets down to 45%, you're very anemic. And half of the people is unconscious with it. And when it gets to 40%, you're very, very anemic, and half of them are dead. Yours is 38%. You should be either unconscious or dead. Well, I says, quite evidently, I'm neither one, so what's the next thing we're going to do? And he says, we're going to get you to the hospital right direct from here and get you a blood transfusion. He called the hospital and they said they had a place for me. And he loaded me in his car and took me out there and entered me. And then they started hunting blood. There wasn't any in the stock that would match with mine. And they kept calling for volunteers, and finally, I think it was the 77th person worked on the job out there with me, and he came in, and his blood type and matched mine, so they drew a pint out of him and gave it to me. And so I was there in this hospital room for about three or four days, and then they moved me into a ward with 22 other men. And there they started to put me on a diet and said I had bleeding ulcers, not one but several. So I was really apparently in real bad shape. They said though I thought they could get the bleeding stopped and get me built back up, but it was going to take a while. Shortly after I got into the hospital, my wife called the president of the company and told him that I was in the hospital getting a blood transfusion, and I didn't know just exactly when I'd get out. And he told her, he said, well, I told him he'd better take it easy and get a few days rest, that he was just putting out too much. He says, really, I don't know how we got this plant running and going as well as we have if we hadn't been able to have got a hold of him. He sure saved the day for us. I was telling him to lay there and get well and not worry about a thing, that he'll be taken care of. After a couple or two or three days, as I said, they moved me to a ward, 22 other men, and there was some real fine fellows there, and I can truthfully say that they were probably the only real friends I made all the time I was there in Michigan of the natives. About the second day I was in the ward, a woman intern she was a refugee from Lithuania, where the Russians had taken over Lithuania after World War II had started over in Europe. And she came in and says, we're going to change your diet a little bit. Says you're going to have to begin to eat some rare liver. I said, no way can I eat liver. I says, you want me to really get sick? She says, you've either got to eat it that way or get it some other way. And I said, well, any other way, just so I don't have to taste it. So she went off and came back in a little while with the biggest syringe I ever saw, and had a gob of pulped liver up in it. And she says, turn over. I turned over, and right in my hip, she gave me that shot of the liver. It was better than eating it at that, because it was sure a big old syringe. That shot picked me up quite a bit. I felt much more stronger after it than I did after the blood transfusion. And they gave me another shot of it the next day. And she said that was probably all I would need. And it turned out that she was right, because in very few days my blood count was practically normal. But I was still somewhat weak. Over the next few days then, I designed the report form for the plant, that is, the operating conditions for each shift that the operators had to make on the plant, including the production and so on. I got that all designed and drew out where they could have it printed, and I did a few other little things concerning the plant like that. And then the roof fell in. That was on the fifth day of March. My wife came in and handed me a letter It was from the president of the company. His office boy had taken it by my house. In this letter, he said, "We are paying you up till the 15th of March and dispensing with your services as of that date. And we find that your health will not stand the rigors of what we expect of our executives." When visiting hours was over, an orderly came in and says, "Mrs. Rolfe wants to see you down in her office. I'm to take you down there in this wheelchair." So I got in the wheelchair, went down, and he wheeled me into Mrs. Roth's office, and he left, shut the door. She says, "I understand that you are discharged." Well, I said, "Just plain out and out, I was fired." But I said, "Don't worry, I've paid the first week's bill here, and I've got enough money in the bank that I can pay you off when I get out of here." She says, "No." Says, "When that happened, your bill stopped." Says, "You don't owe anything right now then." I said, "Well, I don't like that." She says, "Well, that's the way it is anyway." At this juncture in reporting this, it's very hard to imagine a hospital, anybody in a hospital saying that these days. After that, I laid in the hospital then for up until the morning of the 15th, when that was March the 15th, when they told me I could go home that day as quick as my wife had come and get me. So I got all ready and everything, called her, and she came down about noon and went home. While I was waiting for her, I was reading a paper, morning paper. The Government Weather Bureau reported that morning that from the first day of December through till that morning, the sun had shone 3 hours and 20 minutes, which is not very much time. And from the 21st day of December until that morning, it hadn't missed a day of snowing sun. There was plenty of snow on the ground, I want you to know. A couple of days after I got out of the hospital, I called this president of the company, and I said, "What is the deal? What was wrong with me?" "Well, you did have that breakdown and get in the hospital." He said there was several other things we didn't like about what you were doing, like the before one night I was having a lot of trouble there with the engines, and you went home about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'd only been there since 7 the morning before, so I said there was plenty of help there, and a man that knew more about engines than I did that was helping them out and not keeping them running. And I said I was just give out. And he said, "Well, you charged noon meals on expense account a number of times when you could have gone home and eaten." Of course, that would have entailed driving a company car home for about 10, 12 miles and back at noon. And they couldn't have driven that car in that city of Grand Rapids for the amount that I charged for those meals. I think that he decided that he was paying me too much money and he could get the same work, since all the bugs had been ironed out and was going all right. I think he had come to the conclusion that he could get somebody with less money to do that, and that he didn't need a vice president of operations. It also fired all of the fellows that I had hired, with the exception of the Arab that I'd brought up from down in Tulsa, and they kept him on until a couple years later. There were four other fellows I'd hired, and brought three of them up from Tulsa, and one of them had come over from Pennsylvania, and four of them were, all four of those were fired the same time he did me, because I'd hired them, and I think they were, he figured that they were too loyal to me. I stayed around home and for several days around our house, recuperated some more and rested up in good shape. And then I decided to go back to Tulsa. Meantime, I'd consulted the lawyer, and I'd told him the story of how I come happened to be there and what had happened and everything. He says, that sounds like he owes you something for at least a year. He says, I'll tell you what. He says, you give me $5 for looking into it, well, I'll see what the deal is. He says, I think if he doesn't pay off, I can bring a suit, collect. So I gave him the $5, and we decided that the next Monday morning, or next Monday anyway, we would start towards Tulsa. It was Easter was very early that year, and I got a hold of a fella to put our furniture and stuff in storage, and we decided to take leave of Michigan on Monday after Easter Sunday, which I think it was the 26th day of March that we finally left there on Monday about noon after we'd got our household goods all in storage and loaded up the car and headed out. Got to Indianapolis that night. We'd got out of snow and ice and one thing another. Someplace just before we got in Indianapolis, I'd seen a snow bank over beside the bank of dirt the sun never did get to, and I stopped the car and I told the folks to stop and look at that snow, because as far as I was concerned, that was the last time they was ever going to see snow in the natural state, if I could find a place to make a living and not have any snow. Next night, we stopped in a place in Illinois where one of the fellows that hired from Tulsa was working on construction of a plant that was being built, and spent the night with him and his wife. She was the lady that came up there with my wife, and we spent the night there with them. And he wanted me to go to work there. He said he knew I could if they were needing engineers, but I told him no, I was heading on south. The rest of the trip on into Tulsa. course, it was uneventful. We arrived there about noon on the 29th day of March. We spent that afternoon and the night with some friends there in Tulsa. I went around and interviewed some people the next day to see about work. They told me I shouldn't go to work, go for 6 months. I was looking for a sitting down job and not much going on. Most of them knew I was a first class operating man, and that's all they'd have for me. So I decided I'd better follow the doctor's orders and not work for what they told me to do. And so we went on out the next morning. We went on out to Covington, Oklahoma, to Dot's folks. Stayed there a few days and left Patricia there for to finish out her first year of school. I made three schools she went to in her first year: Kiefer, Oklahoma, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Covington, Oklahoma. Quite a deal for her, but it didn't seem to hurt her any, that she got along real well with everybody and was passed to the second grade without a bit of trouble. From there, we went on out to Woodward, Oklahoma, and spent several days there in Woodward with my folks. Then we went back into Tulsa and rented an apartment. And I applied for my unemployment insurance, unemployment compensation, or whatever they called it, and began to interview more for jobs. Talked to the doctor that did the operation on me a couple years before, three. He said, finally, along in May, he says, if you can find a job where all you have to do is point and tell what you want somebody to do, you can go back to work. About that same day, I went down to the unemployment office and pick up my unemployment check. And they called me into the office there and said that there's a mechanical engineer's job on civil service wanted down in the Panama Canal Zone. And would I take it? And I said, well, yes. And so I made out the application, did everything that the supposed to do there, turned it in. Then I wrote to a fella down in Corpus Christi he was in Palestine, Texas. That's where he was in Palestine, Texas, doing a construction job of a gas processing plant. And when I say processing plant or a gasoline plant, they're interchangeable to me as far as designation is concerned. So I wrote this man and told him where I was and how he could get me on No, I didn't tell him. I get me on the telephone. I told him my address. So a couple of days later, I got a telegram from him, and said to call him in Palestine, a certain hotel, immediately. So I called him, and he said this was on a June the 8th. This man that I'd written to was the same man that I had worked for on a construction job down there, Corpus Christi, in the spring of 1937. And I wrote, told him all my situation. He, when I called him, he says, "Are you going to follow those doctor's orders to the letter?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Okay, that's what I want. I want you to come on down to Grapeland, Texas, and we're building a gas cycling and processing plant there, and I want you to finish it up with the instrument department, the instrument part, and controls, and measurement stuff, and get it started and put it on the line." So I proceeded to do that. Go down there, and we arrived on the 10th day of June, and found a place to live. We couldn't live in Grapeland. It was too small a town, and a construction job that size had all the living places taken up. So we had to go into Crockett, another 10, 12 miles away, and find a place for to live. The plant was about 3/4 completed. He had told me that the same superintendent was the superintendent of his construction there that had been the one that I worked for in Corpus Christi before. He said, "You just report to him and he'll be looking for you." So the next morning, June the 11th, I went out to the plant and found him. And he says, "I'm sure glad to see you." He says, "I want to start the engines, but there's something wrong out there, and we don't know what it is on getting those engines started. It seems to be that the gas is not coming to them." So I went out there and found that it was that the gas wasn't getting the engines properly, that it was quick as it got started and started to put a load on it, the engine died. So I checked into the fuel gas regulator and I knew there was something wrong with it. So I got a couple fellas, workmen, and they took into the regulator and found a pair of overalls in it. It stopped up and wouldn't let very much gas through. But while I was putting it back together, I was sitting there in the hot sun, beating down, perspiring quite freely. However, I wasn't doing anything. I hadn't even got my hands dirty. And then walks this gentleman that was the head of this construction company that I'd written to and told him my story. He walked up there, and the two fellows that was working had gone to get a drink of water. And he walked up there and he says, "I thought you were going to follow doctor's orders implicitly." I said, "Well, I am. Mr. Kotzebue," I said, "I'm following them just right down the line. I said, I got two men here that working on this regulator. We're about, they're just about finished, but they went to get a drink of water. They'll be back in just a moment. About that time, they walked back in, and he said, okay, I was just checking to see that you was following the doc's orders. Around the middle of July, we had the plant finished and running pretty fair. Most of the bugs ironed out. And so they told me to get down to Woodsboro, south of Refugio, Texas, to where they were working on another plant, and report down there. They told me the superintendent down there says he is a rough customer. But if you talk back to him just as rough as he talks to you, why, you'll get along okay. So we went down there, and we finally found a place in Refugio to live, as Woodsboro was a very small place. Job like that of going, all the temporary housing was taken up, and we found the place in Refugio. That is quite a place. Met the superintendent, told him who I was, and he said, well, I've heard of you, you little so-and-so and such and such. I said, yeah, and I've heard of you, you big so-and-so and such and such. He says, we'll get along all right. He says, go in there and you probably will know what you're supposed to do, so get to doing it. We got in there and started to, I soon found out what was to be done. It didn't take me very long, and started doing it. Getting the control valves installed and the instruments installed and hooked up. And so somewhere towards the end of August, we had that plant finished. Didn't have quite all the bugs out of it yet, but it was going some. And then they said to go to back down to Corpus Christi, where they were putting an addition on the plant we'd built there in 1937. So I went down there and didn't want to go live in Corpus Christi, so I found a place in Robertstown, which was just a little bit closer to the plant than Corpus Christi would have been anyway. So we were living in Robertstown and putting addition onto that plant. And most of the fellas there I knew already. They'd been on that job on the beforehand. Some of them had worked there, went to work at the plant. And they all said they were sure glad to see me come in there, because when they had to start that thing up, because they didn't know a thing about high-pressure cycle gas. And that's what the addition was for. So we worked that over until sometime September, had it going good shape, about the middle of September, I guess. And it says, we're finished. And we're moving out of here tomorrow. So I said, okay. It says, go on up to Houston. Well, I was figuring on going to Houston anyway to see somebody for their job, because they didn't have any more job right at that moment. And so I went up to the Houston office. They told me that they was all going on vacation, and I could answer the telephone in the office while they was gone. So I hung around there a week and a half, 2 weeks, answering the telephone in the office. And when they got back, there was still no job. Didn't look like they was going to have another one for some little time, so I went on back to Tulsa. While we was in Refugio, while we was in Crockett, I'd got a telegram from the unemployment agency in Oklahoma telling me to get the sheriff's office there to fix up my fingerprints and send them in to the civil service people for that job in the Panama Canal. I did that, got word back just before I left Crockett telling me to hold myself in readiness to catch a boat in New Orleans for the Panama Canal. They'd get in touch with me and be sure to keep me advised of my address. That order to meet that boat might come through any time. So I kept advised all this time. Finally, I got back to Oklahoma, got back into Tulsa, and told them, I said, no order come through yet. Well, they said, just be patient. It may take a while. So I went out to my folks and spent some time. It was only a week or so. We went back to Tulsa and rented a furnished apartment. All of the stuff was still in storage in Michigan. We got a furnished apartment there in Tulsa, and I began to look around. One outfit wanted me to go to someplace down in the Balkans, I think Romania. I didn't want to go there because I said war was going on over there, and I was sure that it wouldn't be too long before we was into it. That I was in the reserve, and they'd call me up. I went, another fellow, a friend of mine there in Tulsa, he was also in reserve. We went down to see about getting into that just before the first draft come along there in 40. He made it, but I didn't. They kicked me out because of my operation on my stomach and the spell in the hospital in Michigan. But they didn't want anybody in the Army like that. They lifted my commission. One day a fella called me from down in the Mercedes in the Rio Grande Valley, South Texas. Said, get on down here, I want to see you. I think I want you to finish constructing a plant for us down here and get it started up and running in good shape. Well, the company was building the plant themselves. There wasn't any construction company on this deal. So we left. We voted early in the morning. We still had our voting place in Tulsa, voting residence in Tulsa. So on the morning of Election Day, November 1940, we voted. Left for the Rio Grande Valley. We got to Hillsboro, Texas, that night. and listen to the election returns coming in. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was running against Wendell Willkie, and there was no chance, when you could see no chance of Wendell Willkie winning over FDR at that time. And by the time the 10 o'clock news come on, there was no doubt who was going to be elected President of the United States. It would be FDR for another third term. The next day, we continued in the rain on to the valley. It rained on us all the way from Hillsboro to Mercedes. We put up that night in Mercedes, and the next morning, I went to the Green Frog restaurant in Mercedes and met the man that was wanting me to come down and talk to him. And he says, you're the man I want, so go on up to Edinburgh and find your place to live and come on out tomorrow morning. We went up to Edinburgh. We found a place to in a duplex we could get for a reasonable price, and went out next morning and got into the throes of finishing up building this plant and getting ready to start it up. It wasn't a very big plant. It's a small plant that would handle about 50 million feet of gas a day at 1,800 pounds pressure, reinjecting it into the input well at around 4,800 to 5,000 pounds pressure. Got a house, found us a duplex to live in. I'd already put in an application with the La Gloria Corporation, which was going to build a large cycling, gas cycling processing plant near a town of Falfurrias, 65 miles north of Edinburgh. I'd stopped by there on the way down, and they just beginning to clear brush at that time. This was just a small plant and two compressor engines. It was going to process some 30 million, 35, 40 million feet of gas a day at 1,800 pounds is what should come into the plant at. And was kind of a small plant to be a building at that, and it was only going to be by natural separation, what we call retrograde condensation. On April 1st, 1941, I went up to Falfurrias and saw Mr. Robert T. Wilson, who was the principal owner and the founder of the company called the Gloria Corporation. And they had the plant pretty well done by that time. And he says, I think we can use you. He offered me a job as the operating foreman and foreman for instruments, measurement, and control. He named a salary that was $50 higher than what I was getting from the man down in the valley, so I said, I have promised that man down there that I would give him 30 days' notice, and I'll have to let you know a little bit later. I went back, and the next day I told this gentleman in the valley that they had offered me this job up there. He said, well, I can't possibly meet that pay. The only thing I can say is I can offer you something in the future, which didn't sound good to me either. So I let them know that I would be up there on Falfurrias at the La Gloria Corporation on May the 1st. So